Walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then no time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Visit betterhelp.com/positive to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/positive.
T-Mobile's network can help keep you connected to all your favorite podcasts when you're out and about. Whether you're an early bird looking to dive into a daily news podcast or a night owl who wants to catch up on the latest reality TV drama, T-Mobile will keep you connected on their strong and reliable network. T-Mobile covers more highway miles with 5G than anyone. So if you need great coverage, especially when you're on the go, check out T-Mobile. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/CY. That's SEEWHY.
No team in any sport starts a season ready to win a championship. I don't care if you were the defending champs like the Golden State Warriors. It's still a process. It's still a journey. There are always new pieces and there are always new circumstances. Even if the roster is exactly the same, which rarely happens, I think with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers a couple years ago when they had won the Super Bowl, they brought back the exact same starting lineup. So every single one of the guys who started in the Super Bowl was part of their roster the next year. But that's just a starting lineup. You still have subs and reserves and depth, of course, that plays into it. But it's not just about you in sports. It's always about the teams that you are going toe-to-toe with in your division, in your conference, in your league, and ultimately in what would be a championship round. So no team ever starts the year ready to win a title. Every journey is different, which is why it's extremely hard to repeat. As a champion, you are marked. As a team that has a lot of success, you've got a bullseye on your back. And then you think about free agency and how often athletes move around. They want to get paid. There's injuries, of course, every year that are the great equalizer. The idea of picking a team before a season begins as a favorite to win a championship always cracks me up. It's only on paper, and paper means a whole lot of nothing once you get out there on the field, the court, the ice. And we're seeing some teams right now in both hoops and hockey who are defying the odds and defying logic, and the Heat are one of those. Man, they were Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde all season long, but they've got a lot of experience and wisdom, and they've had to fight and scratch and claw, and they've got a fearless leader and a grizzled veteran as a coach, and they've got a spirit and a chemistry about them that is rare in sports, which is why they are a tough out. And as Eric Spoelstra looks back on what's been a tumultuous and challenging season, he believes it's prepared them for this point.
We've had to find different solutions to win tough regular season games. And some of those have been offensive rebounding games. You know, where we got extra possessions. Sometimes they were games that we've just had to win in the mud with different guys stepping up. I think that beauty and the struggle has given our group, you know, they just love to compete. You know, and they have an awareness that, you know, against a team like this, you're just going to have to do a bunch of different things. Each game has been a different story, and that was probably 82 games for us.
Eric Spoelstra, I think one of the underappreciated coaches in the NBA. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. You can find our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, or our Facebook page. Thank you so much for the hundreds of comments that you've posted in both places over the last 48 hours. They mean a lot to me. We're keeping our attention on these Miami Heat, who are one win away from
returning to the Eastern Conference Finals. Now that they've got a 3-1 advantage on the New York Knicks, Wes Goldberg covers the NBA and the Heat, joining us from Miami following Game 4 at the Locked On Heat podcast. And let's talk about this particular game, Wes. Where did the Heat find an advantage that's given them this not quite insurmountable but pretty impressive lead in the series?
Well, I think you got to start with the physicality, number one, which is kind of interesting only because the Knicks beat the Cavaliers using that strategy, right? The Knicks had found success all season long, and then obviously in that first round series, out-rebounding the Cavaliers, getting the turnovers, winning those battles for the 50-50 balls, doing all the things that they wanted to do, like a top Thibodeau team wants to do. And the Heat came into the series and they said, all right, bet. And they were like, we're going to out-physical you guys. And so far they have. They won the rebounding battle tonight. They kind of won every 50-50 ball that you could really think of, especially the important ones in that fourth quarter down the stretch. And after the game, even Julius Randle was like, I guess they just wanted it more. And I guess that's just been the tipping point in this series. And, you know, obviously in the three games that the Heat have won through the four games so far, and why they have a 3-1 lead in this series.
Julius Randle enjoys stirring the pot a little bit. What's your reaction to hearing an opponent from another team say that the Heat wanted more?
It's really interesting, and it kind of dovetails with something that Mitchell Robinson said, too, about how, you know, he felt like he was the guy that's usually getting the rebounds, and in this series he's like, I guess I'm just not doing it as well. And I don't want to go so far as to say that the Knicks are a broken team, because they still have a chance in this series. They're obviously, you know, the Heat still need to get another win in this one to close it out. But this is a team that just doesn't feel like it's exuding confidence right now. You know, the Heat, I don't want to say that they're unbeatable, because obviously they're not unbeatable. I don't think anybody in this playoffs are unbeatable, but they just seem unshakable in a way that the Knicks feel like they might be a little shook right now. Who knows what that means? They have another game coming up at MSG, back at home for them. Anything, like, one game can turn things around, but right now, like, they are not feeling good with how they played. And I actually thought that this game was a lot closer than the quality of play might lead you to believe. I thought the Heat played a much more superior game all season, all game long. I thought their process was better. I thought the Knicks made a bunch of tough shots, and credit to them for doing that. But right now, the Heat has been winning, like, across the board on all the key facets of these games.
Flipping it on its head, what you said, where does the steadiness and the confidence come from with the Miami Heat?
They'll tell you that it comes from previous playoff runs and Jimmy Butler. And it's sort of like those two things. And it's a great question, Amy. It's something that I've been sort of trying to figure out ever since they beat, like, it looked like they were going to beat the Milwaukee Bucks in the first round. I was like, where is this coming from? Because I hadn't seen this all regular season long. Nobody did. Like, this team barely got into the playoffs. Like, let's remember, they were a fourth quarter away against the Chicago Bulls in the play-in tournament from watching these playoffs from home. And so maybe there's something to, like, okay, you know, that old cliche in sports, well, the playoffs start and everybody's 0-0 and nobody's got any shooting percentages and all this stuff. And I don't know. You kind of just hear those comments and you roll your eyes usually, but, like, so much of this stuff is mental, and what you and I are talking about are all, like, mental things. Maybe there is something to that for this team, but also, you know, you're talking to players in the locker room after the game tonight, and they really think that last year's playoff run and losing the way that they did in Game 7 to the Celtics, and then this year, the regular season being as up and down as it was for them, dealing with all the injuries and all the things that they had to deal with, it kind of, like, forged, like, them into, like, a stronger team, if that makes sense. I mean, that's what
Sure.
they keep talking about. And the closer you get to these teams and the more you talk to them, maybe there is something to it. I don't know.
The mental toughness is definitely there, and that's one area in which I feel they have an advantage over most teams out there because of everything that they've survived to get to this point. And certainly the disappointment of a year ago, as you mentioned. Wes Goldberg is with us from Miami after the Heat take a 3-1 lead over the Knicks. He's got the Locked On Heat podcast and covers the NBA. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. The injuries, I think, don't get enough attention with this team, and I know every team is dealing with injuries. For them to lose what they have and to continue moving forward, what have you seen from the bench that's impressed you in the playoffs so far?
Yeah, this is a bench that was one of the bottom 10 benches by point differential in the regular season, and in the playoffs, they've also flipped that on its head. They're one of the best benches in the playoffs, and they're outscoring right now the New York Knicks, who had the third best bench in the NBA during the regular season, they outscored them 32-10 tonight in this win. And I think there's a couple things from that. I think number one is Kyle Lowry, right? The Heat moved Kyle Lowry to that sort of six-man role at the end of the year to manage his minutes. He was coming off of that injury. Wasn't really sure what to make of Kyle Lowry or what to think of what he might look like when he came back. And they did a great job kind of putting him on this maintenance program. And he looks really fresh for these playoffs. And let's remember, in the playoffs last year, he was not fresh. He was very banged up. And that was a big reason why their offense got in the mud so many times in the playoffs last year, and ultimately why Jimmy Butler basically had to save them in those Eastern Conference Finals so many times. And they wanted to avoid that in this postseason. So they managed his minutes, kind of kept him around 20 over the last month or so of the regular season. And now he's playing 25 very, very impactful minutes in each of these playoff games off the bench. So he's been a big part of that. Caleb Martin moving him to the bench after acquiring Kevin Love on the buyout market. That's been just a solid, reliable player off the bench. He's always good for a few rebounds and some points and some steals every game. And then every once in a while, we'll get some contributions from a Cody Zeller or a Haywood Highsmith or something like that. But they basically took two guys who have started for them for most of the season, moved them to the bench, and they've created sort of this balance across the rotation in that way.
Why Kevin Love in the starting lineup? What does he bring to the table since he signed with Miami?
A lot of outlet passes, number one. I mean, it's like every time you look up, there was one he added tonight where I was like, oh, what happened? I was like typing something on my computer and the Heat had scored because he had an outlet pass off of a Knicks made three. And I was like, I got to go back and see who scored, what happened. And so it's just like, those are the things that I think separate the regular season from the playoffs, right? It's the regular season, you can kind of win just based on metrics, on numbers, on averages and percentages and all these things. All right, take this many threes, play this kind of drop defense, force opponents into that many mid-range jumpers. And over the course of an 82-game season, the numbers will eventually kind of just sway your way and you'll end up with a winning record for the most part, right? The playoffs are very different. Every single one of these games, they're connected, but they're different, right? Like, it's just one game can change a series. One quarter can change a game, can change a series, right? And a guy like Kevin Love, who has been through so many postseason runs, played in so many final series, is so good at finding advantages in those small little corners of a basketball game. That's the outlet passing, but it's also timely rebounds, timely offensive rebounds, knowing to crash the boards. He's a great cutter off the ball, knowing when to make that cut and just be an available pair of hands for Jimmy Butler when he's being double-teamed. Even if he doesn't score on the play, just keeping the offense moving, right? And then eventually you go from a good shot to a great shot. Those are the kinds of things where he has that in common with Jimmy Butler, with Kyle Lowry. Like, they just understand how to find those little points here and there just to create points out of nothing. And those points can ultimately decide a game. And like I said, that could be a whole series.
Jimmy Butler is unique. His game, certainly. He's got this tenacity and this will that seems unmatched. What's it like to cover him?
What a great question. It's a mixed bag. You know, when things aren't going great, Jimmy Butler, he's never unfriendly with the media, right? But you could tell, like, sometimes, like, if things aren't going great the way that they're in the regular season, you're like, oh, like, I could kind of see how this guy would wear on teams like Minnesota and Philadelphia. Like, I get it. I could see it. But when they're winning, he is so much of a part of that, and he really does have such a presence in that locker room. And Eric Spoelstra says this all the time, right? Like, we are him and he is us, right, in terms of the Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat and that relationship. And I don't know that Jimmy's ever had that kind of relationship with a team, not even like the Chicago Bulls, who basically decided that they didn't want to pay him because they didn't think he was that superstar, so they traded him to Minnesota. And then obviously it didn't work out there, and it didn't work out in Philly, and he ends up in Miami. And it just has been sort of a perfect fit. No matter some of the things that go on, whether he's trying to fight Eric Spoelstra and Giannis has him on the sideline last year or some of the low moments of even this season and the frustrations that came with that, they are willing to deal with that because they know the kind of player Jimmy Butler becomes in the playoffs and what it is that he can do in terms of leading this team to what it is that they want to do. And I think a lot of teams and a lot of players say that they're all about winning and that's all they care about. And I don't know that if that's true for a lot of teams that say that, or players that say that, for that matter. But I think it's true for the Miami Heat, and I think it's true for Jimmy Butler. It's an experience covering him. Like, he's always good for a funny quote at the end of a game. He's very honest, even if he kind of will shake some questions with jokes. you will get honesty out of him, and he's refreshing doesn't sound like the right word to describe Jimmy Butler, but it is a little bit from a media perspective.
Wes Goldberg is with us from Miami. The Heat one win away from getting back to the Eastern Conference Finals. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Also, I think about Eric Spoelstra, one of the longest tenured coaches in the NBA, and I'm constantly calling him underappreciated. He's been there forever. The Heat are always a factor, no matter how many times they change their roster or the roster has changed for him, and the teams can be respected for their defense, for their intensity, and for the fact that they push their opponents to the limit. I'm just a big fan of what he's done over the course of his career there.
And Amy, he's never won a Coach of the Year award.
It's
Isn't
insane.
That crazy?
It's insane.
I've said this for a very long time. I think he's the best coach in the NBA. I don't think it's close. I think that so much of coaching we don't see. In the media, we don't see it. Even if you're covering the team and you're there after practice, you're not in the practice, you're not in the locker room, you're not really there when most of this stuff is happening. Coaching is like an iceberg, right? You don't see like 90% of it. And I think a lot of coaches in the NBA get a lot of praise for drawing up an awesome out-of-timeouts play or a sideline play or whatever it is. And that stuff's important, no doubt about it. And Eric Spoelstra has his fair share of great sideline out-of-bounds plays, all right? But really what I think head coaching in the NBA comes down to is setting a tone, setting a culture for your organization, right? Just like a great CEO or boss sets the tone for his or her sales team, for instance, right? Like this stuff really matters, and getting buy-in and relating to players in a way that makes them feel valued, even if they're not playing and when they're not playing, right? And I think that's a big part of it. And then just like the coaching part of it too. And what I mean by that is not just getting star players and figuring out how to make them fit together, but taking players who might be undrafted, like the 7 undrafted players that the Miami Heat have, and just coaching them up into being better players than they were when they got into the NBA, finding roles that fit for them, finding ways, looking at what it is that they do positively, not necessarily negatively, and trying to find places where you could use those positive attributes. And Eric Spoelstra is as good as it is at doing that. I think it's really impressive. I don't know that there's anybody doing it quite like the Miami Heat in the NBA. I don't know that that means they're going to win a championship. Who knows what ultimately happens at the end of this playoff run. But I know nobody else is doing it like them. And in a league that has been criticized of being sort of more and more kind of vanilla, more and more the same, copy and paste, all right, everybody's taking threes and doing it this way, the Heat aren't doing it that way. They're doing it their way. And that's pretty cool to watch.
Now 15 seasons with the Heat and more than 700 wins. So just out of curiosity, Wes, why do you think he doesn't get more attention for what he's accomplished and what the Heat have accomplished since he's been there?
I think he has the attention and the respect from his peers. I think that there is a little bit of a lack of national media attention on the Miami Heat in general. And so I don't know that that's specific because of Eric Spoelstra. I don't know that any coach is going to be the reason why the NBA schedules national games for a team, right? Nobody's really watching for the head coach on the sideline, right? And there's been a lot of years after the Big Three where, you know, that Big Three shine wears off. And so obviously you're on to the next thing, whether it's the Warriors, the Cavs, whatever. So there's part of that. And then there was a long period where the Heat did not have a star, you know, before Jimmy Butler arrived. I think he does get the respect from his peers, from other coaches in the NBA. You talk to other coaches all the time, whether they're visiting Miami or whatever it is, and you go into those press conferences, to a coach, all of them have nothing but praise for what it is that Eric Spoelstra does. And it's not fake praise, like I respect my opponent, but not really kind of way. Like, it is real, legitimate praise. They view him, his peers, other coaches in the NBA, and other players, by the way, they look at Eric Spoelstra and say, yeah, that's the top of the class right there. That's the guy. I don't know that Eric Spoelstra cares about the lack of national respect or the fact that he is on a coach of the year. Maybe he does. I don't know. But I know for sure he feels the respect from his peers.
It's also unique, too, that he's never coached anywhere else. An assistant coach in the late 90s and has remained there his entire tenure in the NBA, which is pretty incredible. Wes Goldberg is with us from Miami, and he's got the Locked on Heat podcast. We're not going to assume too much, but if they were to face a team in the finals, what's the better matchup for the Heat? Is it the Sixers or is it the Celtics?
James Harden and Joel Embiid versus Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. Bam Adebayo is going to run a lot more interference on Joel Embiid than Embiid's seen in these playoffs so far. And I thought Nick Claxton did a pretty good job, and Al Horford obviously does a good job historically on him. But Bam's a different cat. You know, that's a different kind of assignment. We saw it last year in the playoffs, even though Embiid was a little banged up. I think Bam could limit Embiid as much as anybody can limit the MVP of the league, right? And then Jimmy Butler will take this matchup very personally. Obviously, we know his history with the Philadelphia 76ers. Mm. It's hard to imagine him not leaving everything out there to make sure that he doesn't lose against Philadelphia. When you kind of get to those next layers of like a team like the Celtics, who are so deep, that's where I think you start to worry if you're the Heat. How does your depth match up with the Celtics' depth? So I would say probably Philadelphia. But then again, like Embiid and Harden, they were clicking on Sunday. That's something to monitor, I think, if I'm a Heat fan, is like, all right, what's that really look like? And who's the better team looking like in sort of the second part of the Celtics-Sixers series? So I'd have to say the Sixers for right now, but we'll see.
Considering everything they've been through, it's pretty incredible that the Heat are on the cusp of returning to the East Finals.
It would be 3 out of 4 years.
Right? True.
You don't really think about the Miami Heat as that sort of like dominant of a team that's winning like that, but I don't think there's another team that can claim 3 out of 4, like 3 of the last 4 years, right? Like even the Warriors had 2 bad seasons in there where they were in the lottery. So this is a team, I don't know if they're ever going to win a championship. I have no idea. Nobody knows, right? But they have wrung everything out of these rosters possible. I know it's like rings or bust in today's NBA, but I do think that you deserve a lot of credit and a lot of respect for doing that.
Agreed. The fact that they never go quietly either. They're such a tough out. You can find Wes on Twitter at WC Goldberg. Covers the NBA, both writing and podcasting. You can check him out with the Locked On Heat podcast. Also, see his byline in the Miami Herald and other places like FanSided and Real GM. We are pleased to have you on the show for the first time. Wes, you're welcome back anytime. Thank you so much for a couple of minutes.
Thanks, Amy.
Good information, good intel on the Miami Heat and their journey to this point. And that was really what I was saying at the beginning of this hour before we welcomed Wes, is that the Heat did not start the year ready to win a championship, nor did the Lakers, for heaven's sakes. Their journey has been so varied, and they've had injuries and they've had roster changes. Same thing with Miami. Think about the Phoenix Suns, too, and the iterations that we've seen with their roster and the injuries that they've had and guys on and off. The Denver Nuggets, too, though largely theirs has remained intact. But these Heat, because of what they've been through, are a more serious contender and a tougher out. All right, find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Tony says, playoff Jimmy, the most clutch playoff performer in sports. And then our Facebook page, too. We're glad to connect with you. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. Baby, there's nothing holding me back. You take me places that tear up my reputation, manipulate my decisions. Baby, there's nothing holding me back. Amy's taking your calls at 855-212-4CBS.
Good morning, Amy. Thank you for taking my call. I love your show. You help keep me awake and alert.
Hey, Amy. How you doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to congratulate you by the way that you have been. Your program tonight, I woke up about 1-something. Oh. I've been with you ever since.
Hey, God bless you, Amy.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great.
Hey, Amy. I love listening to you.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Amy, how you doing? First-time caller. Love your show. Love you. Wonderful. In the words of Ric Flair.
Woo!
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Baby, there's nothing holding me back.
Coming up, Lamar Jackson explains why he asked the Ravens for a trade. Not sure if you heard, this is a Ravens team podcast, and he was in a jovial mood, to be sure. It's called The Lounge, and he talked about what he was doing behind the scenes, even as he and the team were in limbo for a contract extension. And also why he requested a trade from Baltimore. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Still Bryce Young to come to, and I love the dynamic of him, the Panthers' number one overall draft pick, talking to an undrafted former Panthers quarterback that helped to lead the team to its first ever Super Bowl appearance. It's kind of an interesting dynamic. So Bryce Young, along with Jake DeLome, will do a little bit of QB news coming up before the next hour is done. Either on Twitter or Facebook, we're glad to connect with you. A little bit of hoops, a little bit of hockey, a little bit of football. Oh, the NFL schedule release comes up on Thursday. And I normally don't care, I'll be honest. I normally don't care at all. But this year, for some reason, I do. I'm not sure why. I think it's probably because I want my question answered of how many nationally televised games are in the Jets' future, are in our future. But also some of these international games and, I don't know, just the various matchups we can look forward to. For some reason, I normally am... Actually, I'm normally on vacation the second week in May. For the first time in a long time, I actually did a vacation in April this year. So that means I'm around for the schedule release. So maybe that's why. And also, did you guys see this lawsuit? But the account of Tiger Woods' ex-girlfriend? Oh my gosh. It sounds like something that you would get out of a salacious soap opera, for heaven's sakes. But yeah, it's become a he said, she said, and be shades of the past with Tiger Woods too, because we know non-disclosure agreements are certainly a part of his life. Marco Belletti is here in studio. Where were you last week? Missed you. Were you taking a vacation?
Yeah, terrible one. It was awesome.
Oh, no, a terrible one.
I had to stay home. I had some work done on my bathroom, so I had to be there. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was not here. It was just to watch and try to overlook some of that. And
a staycation.
Yeah, it was, yeah, but it was worse than that.
Do you know what people call that these days?
What's that?
Working from home. Or as one of our managers, not mine, but the manager for, well, actually, he might be your manager. One of our managers likes to put in the subject heading of an email, WFH. They don't even bother to spell it out anymore. It's just WFH, working from home. So these days, our bosses, and it happens rather frequently, have appointments or have some work being done at their house. And what do? They WFH. So you could have WFH'd.
Nah, not really. No, I mean, kind of hard to be on the air and do that. I mean, it's a little different.
Being sarcastic.
Yeah. So, again.
It's kind of hard to get work done when you're also monitoring a project being done at your house. But what passes for work these days?
Hey, I'm not getting into that.
Yeah, no, you don't have to. I did.
No. But yeah. So that's done, kind of. And
kind of.
Yeah, there was some issues and some problems. So they'll in about 8 weeks or so, they'll come back and finish it.
Oh, no. What's not done? Tell me the toilet's working.
No. They're both bathrooms are. One's actually completely done. One is functionable and can be done. However, they're not technically tiles, but whatever it is like that you put up on the bathroom, they call it tiles, although it's not actually tiles. It's the wrong color.
Oh, no.
So they put it up because they had to leave us a functioning bathroom, but they had to reorder the right color, and they're going to have to come back and demo it.
It doesn't match the rest? Or?
Right, which is why my wife wasn't going to let it go. Because she's like, she picked out all the other aspects of it, and she picked out all the other stuff. Like, they were just putting in the bathtub, which was the wrong one.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was a mess.
How does that happen?
I don't know. So she picked out the vanity, and she did all that stuff on her own, and she's like, all of it matches with the tile that I picked. This is not the color I picked. It doesn't match with everything else. So as much as they were trying to get her like, oh, we'll give you $1,000 off. She's like, I don't care about the $1,000. I care about my bathroom that I'm going to have to look at. It wasn't awful, but it doesn't match. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, coming from me, what do I know? And I didn't care either way, but I could tell. I was like, yeah, I could see why you don't like it. So all I cared about.
And what about the bathtub?
It's the wrong one. It was just, I forget what it was. She wanted the winged or whatever, and this was like the standard. So, yeah.
They're going to fix that too?
No, she let that one go. She let it go because that would have been another. There was a fight. Because technically it wasn't on the contract because she called and ordered it and it wasn't written. Ugh. So they're blaming her. She's blaming them. But it was the idea that like, even if you said, well, they were like, well, you ordered it too late. Well, you could have told us that. This was 8 weeks in production. Oh, you could have told us you were coming with the wrong one. You don't just show up and put it in and then we find out later. Like, just give us a call, tell us, and we'll figure it out from there. Either we tell you, let's push back, or we're cool. They didn't give us an option. They just shoved it in. And it was like, oh, well. And then, well, why did you stop them? I'm sorry, am I in the bathroom working with the three guys? Like, I got things to do. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm not sitting there looking at them. I'm just in the house in case they need
something. Well,
would
you have known if that they were putting in the wrong tub? Yeah, she would have known.
I wouldn't have known. I didn't know any of this stuff. I'll be fair. No, my job was to, you know, just make sure everything was all right and in case they needed stuff. I mean, into the garage or whatever. Like, you know, I was there for that kind of stuff. So not really doing much.
Sounds like a fun week.
It was awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. My goodness. Okay. Well, I guess coming back to work is a relief.
It wasn't the worst thing.
Did you sleep more since you were off at least? Because I know you don't sleep much on this schedule.
Yeah. I don't know if I, maybe a little bit. Not to get in all the, I also got sick during the week. So like it was a bit of a mess this week. So that's all right. I'll get some time off.
You should have used sick days instead of vacation days.
Well, we'll figure it out. You know what? I mean, my wife's due basically any day. So that I'll be gone with for a couple of weeks when that happens. So, you know, with a newborn, maybe I'll get some sleep. So it'll be good.
Yeah, it sounds sounds just exactly like what happens.
No?
Not with your first two?
Well, they don't sleep now, so never mind then. So, yeah, well, I mean, look. The baby gets, it's actually, to me, it's a little easier with the newborn than it is when they get a little older. The newborn, they're going to be up every 3 hours, but they don't do anything. Seriously, you feed them.
They don't do anything.
They don't do anything. They barely open their eyes. You feed them, you put them back down. Like, they don't, there's nothing there. They're just kind of like a pile of goo. So it's really not that big a deal as long as you can wake up every 3 hours, which for me is not a difficult proposition. I can go back to sleep after a couple hours. Not a big deal. Mm. It's getting the other ones to just stay down for, you know, an entire
stay night. There!
Yeah, just don't come out of your room. I don't know how many times I've had to tell that to my son. I'm like, you're almost nine. Just stay in here. I don't care what happened. It doesn't matter. I
don't care
water.
What you're doing. Just
I don't
stay
care.
There.
Just, you know, bring it in there. I leave the water by the bed. Like, he always gets up. My three-year-old is all over the place. Like, what are you doing? Where are you going? What is there to do? She always thinks there's, like, something. She's wide awake. Like, can we do this? Can we do that? I'm like, no. Can't do anything.
Just go back in your room.
It's dark. Nobody cares. Just sit down. I don't understand.
Sit down. Just sit down.
Can't you just, you know, don't
like
bother.
You're a dog. Just
don't,
sit down.
Well, don't bother everybody else. If you want to be awake, just stay in your room.
All right.
But apparently that doesn't work.
I get the parenting tactic.
Yeah, it doesn't
lost
work.
On them.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's not really a tactic. It's, you know, chaos and hoping.
Controlled. Is it controlled chaos?
No, not really. I have no control. Here's my control. I'm not there at night anymore. I'm usually here. So that's good.
There you go.
I'm not there for the chaos.
All right. Well, when we, will you at least do me the courtesy, or not really courtesy, the honor of sending me a text message to let me know that next baby Belletti was born, and then we can know not to expect you for a couple weeks.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Good.
I can do
also
this.
Mostly just because I'm going to be happy for you.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
All right. Cool. Yeah. Well, we'll miss you. It's not the same when you're not here. Trust me.
Nah.
For a bazillion reasons. Don't give me that. You're welcome.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Appreciate you hanging out with us as we meander our way through another night, saying see ya Monday and heading into Tuesday. It's my first week post the insane month that was. And it still feels a little nutty, mostly because I'm trying to dig out. So from April 7th, which was my birthday, it was a Friday, when my family showed up for that weekend and I had company for the next few days. And then beginning what was a really nutty stretch with my Syracuse class 4 Mondays in a row, the trip to Arizona, the total chaos of the early rounds of the hoops and hockey playoffs, because you can have easily 6-7 games per night in those early days. And then Arizona, and then getting back and trying to be in the flow and still manage the drive to Syracuse, and then training for a half marathon and keeping up with Bob and the dog. It's just a lot in the month of April. So I'm really glad that from April 7th to May 7th, I survived and had a lot of firsts, but it's also now in the rearview mirror. But as I'm thinking about these next 6 weeks, so 6 weeks from today until I travel again, no place to go for 6 weeks. I'm really pleased to be home for the next 6 weeks, though there's a bunch of yard work staring me in the face. That's actually the first thing I have to do now post-marathon. Right now, I couldn't do yard work if I tried. My driveway is covered, well, half of it, the half that's under the trees and the bushes, is covered by the pollen and leaves and debris. And I thought about how I need to coach my driveway. And then I just thought, there's no way right now I couldn't navigate that. I couldn't bend down to pick up the debris and sweep it into a, I use a snow shovel a lot of times to sweep debris up into and then shovel it into a bin or a trash can. Anyway, so yard work first. But, and this may be way too late, and you all may have done this already, but starting this weekend, spring cleaning. And I've decided to take a page out of my best friend's plan. Hers was to clean and purge one room a week in her house going back to March. I'm going to start with one room and a week and see if I manage to get through that room. Some rooms will be more challenging than others, but yes, spring cleaning and purging. I usually do this every few years. And actually this month is 3 years that I bought my house. And so it's a good time to go through and purge and make some room, get rid of the last couple boxes that have just been sitting there in the closets that I haven't gotten to since I moved in. I'm actually looking forward to it. It'll feel very cathartic, very cleansing. But just mostly to have the time to do it is nice too. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for finding us on social, A-Law Radio, plus our Facebook page. Next hour, I promise, I'm finally going to pay off on what I told you I would do yesterday. Actually, going back to last week, told you that we would unveil the latest inductee into the After Hours Hall of Fame. And so we will do that. And we're also going to work in a QB news because Lamar, well, he's giddy. I'm not sure who's giddier, Lamar Jackson or Aaron Rodgers. They're both relatively giddy. Or maybe it's Robert Saleh over having Aaron Rodgers. And then Bryce Young talking to a former Panthers quarterback who has a Super Bowl on his resume. It's May, but it's kind of fun to hear from various new QBs in new places, or in the case of Lamar, now that the saga is actually over. By the way, we got so much traffic on our conversation with Andy Herman. So he has the Pack-A-Day podcast, and we talked to him late last week out of Green Bay. We had so much traffic to the podcast, people listening to it, the conversation itself, but also the number of people that were responding. As I was asking, how are Green Bay Packers fans feeling in the wake of the Aaron Rodgers departure, in the wake of this long saga finally being put to bed and the answers now being revealed? A lot of Packers fans who are responding, and Andy's really popular, so a bunch of people were checking out the podcast and his comments in the wake of his appearance here on the show, so that was really cool. There are still people who ask me every single day, do you have a podcast, or who tell me every single day, I don't work the same shift as you anymore, or I miss this part of the show or that part of the show because I only hear the last 30 minutes, whatevs. We have a podcast that's available all the time, all day, every day, and the updated one is posted every weekday morning. We actually share the link on both Twitter and Facebook every weekday morning, and then I usually end up retweeting it later in the day. So it's always out there for you, again, on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on our Facebook page. Speaking of Hall of Fame, this is the type of comment that could land you in the After Hours Hall of Fame, though in the case of Bob Huggins, who has been known to make anti-inflammatory comments in the past, I don't think I'd even touch this with a 10-foot pole. So West Virginia, that's where he's the men's basketball coach, the university is now reviewing this situation, and the athletic department is part of the investigation. Because Bob Huggins, and he's not a newbie. I do not understand how he could make this type of a mistake, or purposefully, even worse, purposefully make these types of comments on a radio show, on a very popular and well-trafficked radio station in Cincinnati. This is News Radio 700 WLW. It's a station I've listened to before. I believe they're still the Reds flagship, but don't quote me on that. I know in the past they were. And he was doing an appearance with the Bill Cunningham show. Now, he used to be the Cincinnati coach, meaning Bob Huggins. So he's doing an interview with the Cincinnati radio station on Monday. And he's asked about the rivalry between Cincinnati and Xavier. Okay, so crosstown rivals. It gets pretty divisive. And he makes a comment about school, any school that can throw rubber penises on the floor and then say they didn't do it, they can get away with anything. But then he goes on to say, and I can't repeat the word, he goes on to double down and he uses a slur twice. It's an anti-gay slur and he uses it twice on the air. And then he throws the Catholic tag in there as well. I'm stunned. I know, again, he's used anti-inflammatory language in the past, and generally he would tell you he doesn't care about the media, he doesn't care about this, he doesn't care about what people think of him. But this can get you fired. Whether or not he cares about his job, I suppose, is up to him. But this makes West Virginia look bad. It forces the athletic department and the university to have to make statements, to have to investigate. He did apologize in a written statement later and called the comments insensitive and abhorrent and said there's no excuse for it. But I don't understand what happens in his brain that he would even use those words publicly. He had to know this is going to happen. I'll bet he gets fired. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio.
I'm JR of the JR Sport Brief Show on CBS Sports Radio. I'm also the host of the new podcast, Agents of Inclusion. We talk to a different Special Olympics athlete every week to learn how sports can bring us together.
We're bringing both the disability and non-disability community to one community. All one people, one family.
Took me a little while, but I decided to claim autism as my superpower. When you hear the word autism, don't let that hinder you from doing whatever it is that you want to do.
That's what Special Olympics tells you. You get involved in sport, but then you take it from the playing field out into real life.
Family means to me community, acceptance, love, embracing a person just as they are. That's what Special Olympics did for me.
It's all about family. Subscribe to Agents of Inclusion on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.